All right, this is scenario two. This patient is Javier McBride. He's a 54-year-old male. His height is 68 inches, weight 150 kilograms. He has a past medical history of hypertension, Hodgkin's lymphoma, coronary artery disease with an ejection fraction of 35%. He's obese with diabetes mellitus, and he has pneumonia. His initial vital signs and appearance is he has a respiratory rate of 28, heart rate of 120, blood pressure of 90 over 50, and oxygen saturation of 98%. He's sitting up in bed, he's working hard to breathe, he's panting, and his shoulders are going up and down.
So you can see that this patient is about ready to fail. They're becoming tired, they're having retractions, tachypnea, tachycardia. So you know they're going to need to be intubated. You decide to use rapid sequence intubation. You have time to do a efficient and rapid airway assessment. You do measure his inter-incisor distance being three fingers. His thyromantle distance is three fingers. But his hyoidothyroid is only one finger. This is an obese patient. He's 150 kilograms, 68 inches tall. So increased BMI and one of the no-neck patients. So you're concerned about your ability to intubate.
Yes, sir. And not surprisingly, his malam body score is 3.
Additionally, his neck circumference is probably greater than 18 inches, which is also an external sign of being difficult to bag, valve, mass ventilate, and a likely history of sleep apnea in this patient.
And even though we didn't get this, I wouldn't be surprised if he had a history of sleep apnea, obstructive sleep apnea, certainly is.
And with all of these patients, it's important to do a laryngeal exam and to find the cricothyroid membrane while the patient is stable, relatively stable.
What
and
would
awake.
You say his cricoid or his cricon is?
I'd say his cricon is probably in the yellow to red range. This gentleman is going to be a very difficult intubation, and I would be very surprised if you could do bag valve mask ventilation on this patient, even in the best of scenarios. Considering now his functional residual capacity is reduced by his obesity, and his pulmonary status is further deteriorated by pneumonia, and his gas exchange will be poor, he's likely to desaturate very rapidly upon induction of general anesthesia.
Yes.
So again, a discussion with the full team is important. Having all of the items for bag valve mask ventilation, including oral airways, up, and the tracheal tubes of different sizes, 7, 6, and 8, as well as video laryngoscopy and direct laryngoscopy, and a supraglottic airway, 4 and 5 in this gentleman are likely to be the correct sizes, likely 5 will be the correct size for this patient for supraglottic airway. And again, to have a discussion with the team about the possibility of doing a surgical airway given his extremis.
And I think this is a patient where I would have that equipment out of the cart at the patient's bedside. And as you mentioned, the cricothyroid membrane to be identified.
So in addition to all of these things being laid out, while these things are being laid out, it's important to make sure that the height of the bed is a comfortable height, that the patient is in the sniffing position, and that suction is available, and that the patient's fully pre-oxygenated. Again, there's a little bit of a difference in terms of approach from the emergency medicine and critical care side versus the anesthesia side. Most anesthesia practitioners would get behind the head of the bed at this point with bag valve mask ventilation and assist the patient in their ventilatory efforts, whereas in the emergency room and in the critical care settings, quite often these patients will have 100% non-rebreather mask placed on them while the airway team then takes the head of the bed position in preparation for induction and airway maintenance. So let's say we give this patient their hypnotic agent, induce general anesthesia, and neuromuscular junction blockade. And right off the bat, we try and go for endotracheal intubation. We enter the vortex at endotracheal intubation as this is a rapid sequence. If from your external exam you are wise to the fact that this patient will likely need a laryngeal manipulation in order to have a good view, and you place either the video laryngoscope or the direct laryngoscope in the patient's mouth and have your hand on the thyroid cartilage, you will likely obtain a good view with this patient and be able to intubate them directly. However, if you attempt to intubate this patient and don't have a good view, and then place in the tracheal tube with a poor view, you're likely to obtain an esophageal intubation with this patient. And the patient's going to desat quite quickly after this. The moment the esophageal intubation is recognized, with lack of chest rise and more importantly with lack of end-tidal CO2, the endotracheal tube can be left in place. It should not be removed. It should be left in place so it can mark the area of the esophagus. And a second attempt can be made. However, if the patient's desaturating quite rapidly and one is concerned about doing a second attempt and the poor view, bag valve mask ventilation should be attempted, as in the vortex going from endotracheal intubation to face mask ventilation. An oral airway and two-hand ventilation, sadly in this patient, both fail due to his issue with obstructive apnea. And as the patient's oxygen saturation falls further and bag valve mask ventilation is determined not to work, an LMA can be placed, either a size 4 or size 5, as discussed before. Either will work in this patient, and the oxygen saturation can be brought back up again, patient stabilized, when a second attempt can be made at endotracheal intubation. If you choose to leave the endotracheal tube in the esophagus, as we discussed earlier, it's going to have to be removed, obviously, for bag valve mask ventilation or supraglottic airway management. I would only recommend leaving the endotracheal tube in the esophagus if one thinks one has a decent shot at getting it the second time. If not, just pull it out and improve the patient's saturation with a supraglottic airway or a face mask ventilation.
You mentioned some optimization techniques and bag valve masking this patient, Jessica, using two hands or an assistant, obviously an oral airway, nasopharyngeal airway. I personally believe that anytime you bag valve mask a patient, that you need to at least put in an oral pharyngeal airway. But it's important that you try to optimize the bag valve mask techniques that are suggested by the vortex model.
On absolute, I'll emphasize that you don't want to do bag mask ventilation on a patient who's anesthetized and paralyzed without putting in an oral airway. Another consideration could be that maybe you could actually, an alternate technique would have been to foreseen that this patient may be difficult to mass ventilate, so that you can actually insert your supraglottic airway while you still have your laryngoscope in place, so the laryngoscope actually can create space for actually advancing the airway, the supraglottic airway.
And some practitioners from the anesthesia provider side will choose to do an intubating LMA with this patient. This is a technique that's quite efficacious, but is not absolutely necessary in this patient.
Right. And certainly what I found with intubating LMA, certainly if I've got a case at this stage where I'm already having some difficulty, a cautionary note here is that intubating LMA would not provide as optimum conditions for ventilation as for a regular LMA. So not to say that you don't want to do it, but that's just a consideration.
So the most important thing is to move expeditiously through the vortex and not to get hung up on any one technique.
Yes.
And not focus on any one technique for any, but to move expeditiously through the optimizations in each and until an airway is obtained.
I think that's a very important point, Jessica, that we often get caught up. We have this goal of intubating the patient with an endotracheal tube, and we get fixated on that and ignore these other techniques. Perfectly fine to put in a supraglottic airway in the patient. As long as it works, you're oxygenating the patient, you're getting alveolar oxygenation. But we tend to move into this fixation error mode of just focusing on what we intended, particularly in the emergency department.
Yes, certainly. We tend to do that while the oxygen saturation is still optimum. And we tend to forget that once the saturation drops, it's going to drop fairly fast. So even though you still have this oxygen saturation of about 100%, you definitely still want to move expeditiously through the different stages of the cycle.
The ASA difficult airway algorithm stresses the ability to back up and to allow the hypnotic agent and the succinylcholine to wear off and then to allow the patient to regain spontaneous ventilation. However, in my experience with most of our VA patients, the hypnotic agent will maintain apnea in a patient anywhere from 5 to 7 minutes up to 9 minutes, depending on how much midazolam or fentanyl the patient has received before the induction agents. And in these cases, these patients tend to desaturate within 3 to 5 minutes. So the time to desaturation is much shorter than the time to regaining a consciousness. So that option is quite often closed to us.
Yeah, certainly this particular patient was already obese and he has a pneumonia. The time to desaturate is going to be very, very fast.
All right. So we'll close that out for the discussion of case number 2.
Thank you.